Wait a second. Oh, good morning. I didn't see you. Can you hear me all right? Can the choir hear me? All right, choir, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to talk that loudly. Excuse me. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
But I can't face this way. How'd you like that ode to joy when we entered? That was very exciting. I'm sorry to hold you up here. All right, this is the best I can do. I have to tell you one thing. I have a long memory. For example, I remember the original Howdy Doody television show. It was the 1950s, and I was a little boy, and I adored that television show. I even remember being overwhelmed with excitement when my parents arranged for little four-year-old me to be on the TV show, the real thing. I remember getting all dressed up. My heart was pounding as I sat in the front row of what was called in those days the Peanut Gallery. Speaking of TV, I also remember the man who did the local weather when I was a child. His name was Percy Saltzman. And he would tell us about the weather on TV every day using a piece of chalk on a real squeaky chalkboard, which is not exactly how the weather is done today, with computers and graphics and all kinds of different colors. What's more, here in Springfield with the television weather comes certain titles. We watch what is called the storm team that brings us what is called first warning weather. It's the storm team with first warning weather. Even if the sun is shining and there's not a cloud in the sky, the storm team comes with first warning weather. It seems as if something is about to go wrong, impending doom. First warning, because trouble is coming. Break out the umbrellas, grab your snow shovel. It's this tune of foreboding, this tune of warning that goes along with the Jeremiah reading we read only a few minutes ago. We were in chapter 8 of the book of Jeremiah, where Jeremiah gives voice to the worst of the worries you can imagine. It is the storm team, a la the Bible. And Jeremiah declares, "My joy is gone, grief is upon me. Hark the cry of my poor people from far and wide in the land. The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved." And Jeremiah says, "For the hurt of my people is mine. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Oh, that my head were a spring of water and my eyes a fountain of waters, tears, so that I might weep day and night." This is difficult material, stormy weather. Jeremiah is grief-stricken. "My joy is gone," he says. "Grief is upon me. Oh, that my head were a spring of water and my eyes a fountain of tears, so that I might weep day and night." Here's my question for this morning. Who needs this recitation of gloom? To say the least, this does not feel like a passage for summer and sunshine. If anything, these Jeremiah words sound as if they would fit winter and slush. There's no smile here, only a frown. Now, is this why you come to church? To read Jeremiah and be depressed? Or do you come to church to be inspired? What is supposed to happen when we gather here for worship? Storm team and warnings, or something different? On the one hand, what happens on a Sunday morning doesn't necessarily connect with that cute little yellow smiley face you often see around. That's not how the world works. Outside these sanctuary doors, we know there are drugs and poverty. There are broken families. There are children who never speak to their parents, and there are parents who never speak to their children. We know General Motors is on strike this week. There's a whiff in the air suggesting war with Iran, or if not war, then something violent. Drones fly over Saudi Arabia. Interest rates are going, is it up or down? I'm never quite sure. There's inflation, economic stagnation, and you tell me which is going to take place and take hold. There was an election in Israel this week, but the outcome is still not sure. And don't forget climate change. Will it get very hot or way, way, way hot in the next 5 or 50 years? I'm reminded of the story told about a tourist who went to a travel agent and asked about a new place to explore for his vacation this year. The agent grabbed the globe and started pointing to various countries. They all have fine climates, he said. Well, but one has experienced a hurricane, another suffers under a dictator, and the other has petty crime everywhere. The tourist took the globe and swirled it around a few times and then finally asked the travel agent, "Mister, maybe you've got another globe?" Storm team, first warning. My joy is gone, grief is mine. Ouch. You can't really come to church without having read the newspaper or heard the television news. It's easy to understand if you walk in here bearing the weight of the world upon your shoulders. Except, I don't believe that you come here to have your worst fears exaggerated. You may not expect a comedy routine from me, but I am quite sure you didn't come this morning expecting Hamlet or King Lear. Here's a secret. That's not what the church is here to offer. Now, how do I know that? In part, I know it because I've looked down the line at the rest of the passages from Jeremiah, which we're going to hear here in church over the next few weeks. Here's something fascinating. The Jeremiah passages that are forthcoming generally don't remain as somber as what we've heard this morning. Next week, for example, another Jeremiah text will be read. Except get this. The verses will be from Jeremiah chapter 32. Where despite the fact that the Babylonians are at the gates of Jerusalem, ready to destroy all of Jerusalem, Jeremiah, next week, is going to buy some real estate in Jerusalem. Not only that, Jeremiah proclaims that although the land may seem worthless right now, there will come a time when the people will reclaim Jerusalem. There will be a time, he believes, when everyone will want to build a home and want to plant a vineyard in peace. That's next week's Jeremiah. But only a few weeks later, we'll return to Jeremiah, and then we'll hear him promise that God will create a new covenant with the people. God will remember sins no more, God will forgive them. And only a week before Advent, Jeremiah 23 will be read. In that chapter, Jeremiah will announce God's promise. Quote, I will gather the remnant of my flock from all the lands. I will raise up a true branch of David's line. He shall reign as king, and he shall do what is just and right. Doom and gloom will give way in the coming weeks to better times and hope. The frown will change to a smile. The slouch and bended shoulder will be replaced with heads held high and eyes, your eyes, that shine. And I know why that will happen. And so do you. The clouds will clear because ultimately, that's why we're here anyway. We come for worship to this place because this place is a sanctuary. It's a safe place. It is a sanctuary that knows all about the pain of the outside world, but is also a place in which you and I refuse to let that outside world have the final word. The sanctuary protects us. The sanctuary gently holds our dreams. Picture this if you can, another sanctuary. It's a Jewish sanctuary. In every synagogue in the world, if you go into the sanctuary, you'll see towards the front a raised area, and you'll see towards the front what's called the Ark. It has doors on it, and inside the Ark are the first five books of the Holy Bible. That's called the Torah. But I'm pointing out to what's over the Ark. In every sanctuary over the Ark, there is a small light. Now, the light could have various names. It could be called the small light, or it could be called the little light, or it could be called the fragile flame. But listen to this. It's not called any of those. The light in the sanctuary of the synagogue is called the Ner Tamid in Hebrew, the Ner Tamid, which means the eternal light. That's really unexpected. In days of old, the light would literally have been nothing more than a tiny flame lit by a candle. The breath of a child could have extinguished it. But here's the point. It was still called the Ner Tamid, the everlasting, the eternal light. That's because there was believed to be something that would never allow the light to get blown out. Tiny as a small flame, that light was strong because God was strong. The light was eternal, everlasting, because there was and there is something in the sanctuary that protects and guides all of us at our best. So what are we doing in this sanctuary? Even if this sanctuary doesn't have a literal eternal light, we are here because all of us believe there is something powerful and persistent afoot in the world. Call it hope, call it light, call it God. When we are hungry, there is a place to turn for nourishment. When we are lonely, there is a place for community. When storm clouds actually threaten us, there is a place for sanctuary. I think that is the magic of our being together. We cannot remedy the problems of the world out there, but we can summon the strength and the faith to do something about those problems when we sit here amongst each other. You don't really have to come here for that purpose. Lots of very good people care about the world and almost never pray, and they don't come to this sanctuary, which is wonderful for them and good for them as well. But lots of good people also do almost nothing for the world, and they also never come to pray in this place. You and I are somewhere in between. We're different. We come here because what we do here builds us up. The vision of a better world touches something inside you and you and you and me. This talk about goodness and the stories of Jesus, they help us believe that dreams are not foolish. People can change the world today because we have learned about people here who made a difference in eras gone by. I like coming here to hear those stories. Actually, I love being here. I love the music and the wording. I love the pageantry and the history and the kindness. I love the fact that we slow down here. We pause and take a breath. We even greet each other. We care. It's not perfect here. Some days I may like one of the church melodies better than another. Some days I wish we maybe had another reading. But ultimately, that does not matter. Because taken as a whole, the service creates an alternate reality. The service says there is a place where all of us matter and God cares. I think the service smiles. Not a feeble smile. No, I think the service shines light on all of us that makes us feel comfortable and feel comforted. The service embraces us and tells us we are connected. What more could I ask for? What more could I ask for on a Sunday morning? Oh yes, I began with a memory, and I have one more memory. Do you remember one of the early self-help books that came out in the 1970s? It had the perfect title, I'm Okay, You're Okay. Now, to be honest, I don't remember what advice the book contained, but I do remember the title because that title communicates the secret of our sanctuary. We come here because when all is said and done, the service whispers, I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay. What a beautiful, positive teaching. I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay. When we are here, that is how I feel. That is what I believe. What a grand gift. I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay. So may it be today and whenever we gather in this holy place. Amen.